Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. So here we are in Kali Yuga, the age of darkness, according to the Hindu tradition, the Hindu time frames of different eras that occur during the life of the universe, the life of creation, rather. So many universes, the creation, that cycle of creation, because it's not linear. It actually is a cycle. So in that age of darkness, why bother? If we know it's the age of Kali Yuga, if we know that things are gonna get worse, why bother? Because we've been put here. And because in the scriptures, what we are told is, God says, whenever darkness is winning out over light, whenever adharma, unrighteousness, is winning out over dharma, righteousness, I incarnate in form on earth in order to bring light back to the darkness, in order to bring dharm back to adharm. And because our scriptures also tell us that that divine is in every one of us, which means that our duty, our dharm, is to bring light to the darkness. Now, we may not single-handedly be able to undo Kali Yuga, but we're not being asked to. We're simply being asked to bring back light to darkness, to bring back dharm to adharm. Because if not, we are failing in our duties. In the Bhagavad Gita, which if you come to satsang a lot, you'll realize it's sort of my go-to text, because that which occurs in our life, the questions that arise, I find so frequently. So frequently, I can look at the Gita, and actually Lord Krishna has already given the answer. I don't have to rack my brains. I don't have to try to think about it and figure out, oh, what did this one say? It's right there in the Gita. And in the Gita, Lord Krishna has made it so clear that the reason Arjuna has to fight this battle is not because he's definitely going to win. Lord Krishna does not say, oh, don't worry, you've got this one covered. Don't worry, I'm on your side. How could we lose? Interestingly, in all of these verses, in 700 verses of the Gita standing on the battlefield, if everyone could just take a moment and turn their phones off, that would be fantastic. Or on silent, that would be fantastic. I know sometimes we think they're off, but just take a moment and make sure they really are. So in 700 verses, he doesn't say, don't worry, nothing to worry about, you're gonna win. He gives him the entire Bhagavad Gita of why he needs to fight the war without ever once saying, and I promise you will win. And the reason to me that that's so important is the teachings are the same, whether you're going to win or not win. They're not the teachings that you give to someone who's definitely going to win the battle. They're the teachings you give to someone who must fight the war, whose dharma it is to fight that war. And so for us, our dharma here, yeah, it's Kali Yuga. Why have you been born in Kali Yuga? Why have I been born in Kali Yuga? Why have we all been born in Kali Yuga? Well, the whole karmic package for all of us has brought us here in Kali Yuga, in this age of darkness. Clearly, for some reason, nothing is random. It means we are the ones who can bring that light back to that darkness. I would not be very good on a battlefield. I don't know how to work a bow and arrow. I get scared very easily. Good thing I was not the one standing in that chariot with Lord Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra who had to fight the battle because I couldn't do it. Arjuna was there who could do it, whose dharma it was to do it, and whose karmic package had brought together this warrior who could do it. So we are each given the tools, the ability to be able to do that which we are supposed to be doing. So never doubt that. Yeah, it's dark. But if every single one of us becomes a light, we will be able to change that. I deeply, fervently believe that nothing in the universe is random. And it goes against every aspect of God that I know inside me. To have us be here, jumping around, protecting water, protecting air, protecting soil, saving lives, just because it's this play that God wants us to do, and actually none of it is going to make any difference, and actually none of it could make any difference because it's all supposed to go to hell anyway. I don't believe that. It doesn't align with my experience or my belief in God. I don't believe anything is without reason. And so if we are here at this time with the tools that we have, with the compassion that we have, the empathy that we have, the pain in our hearts that we have at what is happening in our world, it's been put there for a reason. And the skills that we've been given have been given to us for a reason. Like Arjuna was able to do that thing with the bow and arrow because that's what he needed to do. We need to do something different. And so we've been given different skills and abilities. But that's for each of us to use them. To bring back that light. Remember also, again, that we're speaking cyclically, not linearly. And so, it's a cycle. Something needs to bring back the light. It's not automatic. We need to bring back that light, bring back the truth. Who knows how it needs to start, when it needs to start? Let it start with us. That's what we're here for. And the good news is, I'll tell you one last bit of encouraging trivia, you can say, about Kali Yuga. Because it's the age of darkness, because it's the difficult time, not just outside, but even inside, in our minds, in our own egos, in our internal lives, When you have a negative thought, but you don't act on it, you don't get the negative karmic fruits of it. Okay? So if I have a thought that says, oh, I'd like to kill that person. But not only don't I kill them, I don't even trip them accidentally. I mean, I literally don't act at all on the thought. I just have the thought. I don't acquire any negative karmic fruits from it. Now, it's subtle and it's difficult because typically whatever we think, we tend to act on. But in a vacuum, if you understand, simply having a negative thought that I don't act on, unlike other yugas, unlike other eras, you don't get negative karma for having that thought. But if you have a positive thought, a good intention that you don't act on, you do get the good karmic fruit. So we actually have been given, you know, it's like if you're going to race in a race and somebody's, you know, handicapped or has a handicap in some way, typically in a race there's some way that they'll, you know, let them start a little bit ahead or do something because they understand this isn't a fair race. This guy's fast, this guy's slow, so all right, he gets to start 10 feet ahead or he gets the inner lane. So in a way, God has given us sort of this handicap in Kali Yuga that we get the credit for good thoughts even if we don't implement them. But we don't get the penalty for bad thoughts as long as we don't implement them. So that was sort of, I think about it as God's way of giving us a bit of a head start. Saying, yeah, I know your minds are going to be a mess. It's Kali Yuga. Just make sure you don't act on it. And I'm going to give you these teachings and techniques to help you work with your mind. So the mind doesn't trouble you. And doesn't spur you to action. So with that head start, with that divine handicap extra that we've been given, we move forward. And we move forward to bring as much light in the darkness as we possibly can. Because if it was really supposed to be dark, we wouldn't have hearts that love. We wouldn't cry at other people's pain. We wouldn't have compassion. So the fact that we have all of those things still makes me know that we're not supposed to just dance uselessly, but actually that we are supposed to be bringing light as much as we can. And this is where that teaching of just surrender comes in. You don't think God knows it's Kali Yuga? Of course. And what that means is that which we are supposed to be able to do, those are the tools that have been given to us. That which we can't do, well, God knows we can't do it. But if we've been given initiative and we've been given a yearning and we've been given skills, let that be the signal to you that you can do it. If you can't do it, we very rarely in life, if you really think about it, we very rarely in life, when we are in tune deeply with our own nature, we very rarely have a deep, deep calling to do something that we absolutely cannot do. So for example, I'd love to be able to fly like a bird, but I never have this sense inside of like, I'm going to go up to the roof and I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to do it. The only time people do that is when they're on drugs. Nobody in any kind of personal alignment has such a strong inner calling to fly that they actually throw themselves off a rooftop. If you think about the things that you actually have deep callings to do, we have deep callings to love. We have deep callings to be loved. We have deep callings to share who we are, the gifts of who we are. We have deep callings to help. All of that we have the tools and the ability to do. So realize that when you're in alignment, when you have a calling, know that you can do it when it comes from deep within. And don't allow yourself to say, well, it's just Kali Yuga, forget it. Yes, it's very important. Because in this Kali Yuga, you have your own karmic package. And your karmic package of this life and of all your other next lives is going to be based by how you live in this life. And even in this life, we are told, be a tool in the hands of God, surrender. Be an instrument. Serve selflessly. Chant God's name. Not one of the enlightened masters of the Kali Yuga has said, oh, well, you know, that Gita, forget it, that Ramayana, forget it, they belong to different yugas. Not one. If you had, over the last thousands of years, if there were even five, say, enlightened masters who had said those scriptures don't apply here because we're in a different yuga, I'd say you have a case. But every single one of the enlightened masters, the sages, the saints, the rishis, have said, and again, we're not even looking only at the Hindu tradition. The other traditions might not refer to the Bhagavad Gita, for example, but they're giving the same truth just in different ways. Serve God, love thy neighbor. Right? Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Nobody says, eat, drink, and be merry because it's Kali Yuga and you can't do anything anyway. And so I have to believe that thousands of years of Kali Yuga enlightened masters, sages, saints, rishis, saying, follow these scriptures, follow these teachings. These are what we need to do.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Aliyah, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Some religions say they're the only true religion. Some people say, follow me, and I will set you free. Is there one true path to the divine? The only universal transcending all barriers of religion and culture and language, the only path that is true and universal is the inner path. Every path that's true is an inner path. But there's lots of ways to get there. All that matters is you go within. Now, some of us go within first by going without. So maybe we attend our places of worship, regardless of what our religion may be. We worship the divine in the name or the form, whether we say Krishna, whether we say Ram, whether we say Shiva, whether we say Jesus Christ, or we say Allah, we say Adonai. I mean, there's so many different ways of speaking to, speaking about, connecting with the divine. So maybe we begin by looking outward. But if it's a true path, even if you begin by speaking out and looking out, it's going to take you within. Ultimately, all of the paths are going to take you to an experience of the divine within yourself. You could also begin just by going within. It's, for some people, it's easier to begin by looking without. For some, it's easier to begin by going within. There's all kinds of characteristics in the world. We have all kinds of histories, all kinds of experiences. There are some people who, due to what they've experienced in their life, due to how they were raised, have sort of allergies, you could say, to organized religion. No problem. God does not require that you tick a box on a form. I'm this one or that one or this one. But for some people, to experience the divine within, it's much easier to begin in front of an image, a form, whether it's literally in front of you or whether you're holding it in your mind, of the divine, that as you love that form of the divine, it turns on love inside you, and now the lover, the beloved, become one. So I may begin as the lover over here with the beloved there, and there's this thing called love that I'm feeling. But as I experience it, as I love and I love and I love, ultimately, the lover, the beloved, love, it all just becomes nothing but love. Nothing exists but love. But it began by me sitting down and envisioning in my mind, or actually beholding in front of me, a particular chosen name, form, image of the divine. So that's great. If that works for you, wonderful. If lying on your back and looking up at the stars and experiencing the amazingness, the infinite nature of the creator of this, who pervades the creation and therefore pervades you, and you experience it like that, great. Doesn't matter. What matters is that they take you in. That's the main thing. Every path that works is a path that's going to take you in. So don't worry about, do I have the right path? Do I have a good path? Do I have the expedited path? Do I have, you know, the fast track? The only way to fast track your connection to God is, as we were talking about last night, to surrender. Apisko band kai dijega. Dhanyavad. Is to surrender the ego. Because that's actually what's keeping you from connecting fully with the divine. Otherwise, God with form, God without form, God with name, God without name, don't worry. We're here on the banks of Ganga. And the example for me that's so simple and so beautiful and so pertinent is Ganga's blessings shower us when we have a bath in her waters. They shower us even when you just come to her banks. But let's talk for a moment about having a bath in her waters. So here we are on the banks of a 2,500-kilometer flowing river who has two banks. So we're on one bank. There's another opposite bank. Along this 2,500 kilometers, you could really think of it as 5,000 kilometers, because 2,500 on this side, 2,500 on that side. There's an innumerable, almost, number of ways you can get into Ganga. So many different ashrams, so many different ghats, different steps, different ramps, different beaches, so many different ways you can get in. And it doesn't matter. There's no scripture I know of, no teaching I know of, no saint or sage or guru I know of who says, fast track to liberation, this got, I'll take you. Doesn't matter, just get in. Any got, whatever's closest to you, whatever's easiest for you, whatever works for you, just get in. Same way with God. Whatever works for you, just connect. For those for whom a name, a form helps us focus, great, use it. For those for whom the idea of a specific name, form, religious thing makes us bristle, no problem. Meditate on love. Meditate on the stars in the sky. Meditate on the infinite nature of yourself. Meditate on how many times your physical body has changed form since you've known it. We've been saying I and me since we were about two. That's what makes them the terrible twos. It's when we suddenly learn no. You learn that I've got this thing and it's autonomy and it's a voice and it's me and I can use it. And look how I can make mom's face turn all red. And look what I can do. That's when we start saying I and me. Now you think, how many times has your body changed shape since you were two? How many times have the cells of your body regenerated? Well, the skin cells do it every few days. The organs take 7, 8, 9 years. Meditate on what is it that has stayed constant? Who's the I that as the body keeps changing? If there's not one cell with you today that was there when you were two, who's the I? Meditate on that. Meditate on what it is that has created such an extraordinary system that keeps you breathing even when we can't remember to breathe for the 5 minutes of our meditation. The 5 minutes that we've dedicated, I'm going to meditate. We always say that's bare minimum. If you can do longer, great. But even if you only got 5 minutes, meditate for 5 minutes. And what you'll find amazingly is, even in 5 minutes, the mind wanders. So even for 5 minutes, I cannot stay focused on my breath. Who keeps breathing me? Meditate on that. So the point is, there's an infinite number of ways in. I've just given you half a dozen in a few minutes. Whatever works. But make sure it's an inner path. It can be connected to the divine outside, of course, because there is no distinction between the self and the divine. That's what yoga is, that union of the small self to the supreme. That's actually what yoga is. So it connects us to what seems like outer, but make sure that it's focused on the inner. That's how you're actually going to have the experience. If it's a path that is singularly focused on something outside of you, that is separate from you, that is judging you, that is angry at you, that is rewarding and punishing you, it's going to be very difficult to connect to that. That feels much more like a school teacher or an angry Santa Claus than like the divine to whom we connect. So make sure that it's a path that also takes you in to know that that which you're experiencing out here also exists inside. That's the mantra of So Hum that I gave in the meditation. Other than Om, it's probably the simplest mantra to chant. But the meaning is so deep. I am that. Capital T that. Everything. I'm everything. So if your path takes you in, it's the right path. Keep going in, deeper and deeper and deeper. And eventually you're going to realize there is no inner, there is no outer, it's just God. But you have to start walking in one of the directions. And again, begin by focusing outward, no problem. Love that divine. It's going to awaken the love in you. It's going to connect you to the divine within. Start by going within, no problem. It's going to make you love all of that which is out here. Because when you really connect with the divine within, you fall in love with the creation. The way I always say, we fall in love with even really bad pictures that kids we love have drawn, right? If you've ever loved a 2 or 3 or 4 year old who scribbles for you on construction paper, well, it's precious to you only because you love the one who made it. To someone else, it's meaningless scribbles. But because you love the artist, we love the art.
This is OTRFM. Part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. I want to know the scriptures and the Vedas in depth, but it seems difficult and not for the common person. What is the simplest path to follow? So, fortunately for us, Arjun asked Lord Krishna a very similar question. Standing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and in response to that question of how do I know? How do I know the truth? How do I know the divine? How do I know all of this wisdom? What's the right way? What do I do? So Lord Krishna gave him, in response, the Bhagavad Gita, the song of God that he spoke to Arjuna standing on this battlefield of Kurukshetra. In the Gita, we have 700 verses compared to volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes, that really is seen as the essence of all of the teachings. I've heard it said frequently that we know that Vedanta is literally Ved-ant. So the end, the distillation of the Vedas is Vedanta. Hence, we have the Upanishads, which are seen really as the essence, the distillation of all of the Vedas. So we've gone from all of the Vedas into the Upanishads. But then I've heard it said that the essence of the Upanishads is given to us in the Bhagavad Gita. So we go from all of the Vedas, all of the different scriptures that we have, into the Upanishads. From the Upanishads, we come to the Bhagavad Gita. So, in terms of the study of the scriptures, if you simply study the Gita, you've got 700 verses. Definitely manageable, definitely doable. But even so, within the Gita, and the Gita, by the way, is absolutely for common people. That's how the scriptures have been given to us, is for the common people. Hence, they're given to us in stories. Take the Ramayana, take the Mahabharata. They're given to us as these beautiful epics, absolutely for the common people. This is not esoteric, complex, non-understandable by the masses scripture. This is story. It's a story with the teachings of how to live. But even if you don't want to go through all of the epics, which by the way, I would recommend doing. I mean, they're exquisite. Read the Ramayana, read the Mahabharata. They're absolutely for common people. But you could also just take the Gita, 700 verses. But in the Gita also, when Arjuna asks this question, so Lord Krishna gives him basically three ways of knowing God, of attaining oneness with God, right? Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga. So this path of wisdom, Jnana Yoga, path of devotion and love, Bhakti Yoga, path of action, Karma Yoga. And what's beautiful is as Lord Krishna is explaining each of these paths. As you're reading it, if you're reading it for the first time, you think, oh yeah, this is his favorite. So as he's talking about Gyan Yoga, you think, oh, okay, so he's advocating for Gyan Yoga, the path of wisdom. Study, learn, inquire, introspect. And then when he's talking about Bhakti Yoga, you think, oh yeah, okay, so this is really his favorite. The path of love, the path of devotion. And when he talks about Karma Yoga, the path of action, you think, ah, this is the one. And when you've actually read the Gita in its entirety, ideally a few times, or at least with commentary a few times, and introspected on it many times, what you realize is he doesn't have a favorite. Each of them is his favorite in the way that if that's what you practice, that will get you to this oneness with God. Because as the questioner says, so I want to learn the Vedas and the scriptures. Well, the only reason to learn them of value is to know God. To know the self means to know God. If the only reason I want to learn them is so that I can recite them to other people and impress them, it's not a very high motivation. So we're not even going to go there. If you say, well, I just want to learn them so that everybody thinks I'm really smart. Well, okay, that's not the point. We won't go there. If we assume that the questioner wants to learn them for the real reason that we have the scriptures, which is not about an academic practice. It's not about memorizing them just so that you can recite them and make people say, wow, God, you're so smart. But actually, the point of the scriptures is to know the self, the capital S self, just to know God. So we then come to the Gita, to Lord Krishna's very clear instructions of how to know God, how to unite with God, how to attain, whether we say spiritual awakening, moksha, enlightenment, liberation, whatever our word for it is, doesn't matter. They're all going to the same place. So through wisdom, study the scriptures. But don't just study them as an academic exercise. Ask yourself, take one line, one shloka. How does this apply to me? How can I implement this in my life? Meditate on it. It's not about how much can I get through or how much can I memorize. It's about how can it change me? There's a great story of a young boy whose grandfather was very pious and read the Gita all the time. And so the boy decided, well, I also should read the Gita. You know, children, we always think that children will learn what we tell them, but actually children learn what we do. If you really want to teach kids, watch what you do much more than watch what you're telling them to do. Your children will grow and learn based on actually what they witness you doing, much more than what you instruct them to do. So this boy sees his grandfather studying the Gita, reading the Gita, decides he should also. One day he goes to his grandfather and he says, Grandpa, I'm miserable, I'm useless. And the grandpa says, what happened, Betha? He says, well, I'm trying to read the Gita, but I can't understand anything. And even if I understand a tiny little bit, I can't remember it. Go back the next day, I pick it up again, and it's like a brand new. Don't remember anything. So the grandfather says, that's okay, just keep trying. A couple weeks go by, again the boy crawls in his grandfather's lap. He says, Grandpa, I'm useless. Still, I can't remember anything. I don't understand it. I hate myself. The grandfather says, all right, Chelo, let's forget the Gita for a moment. Do me a favor. You see that coal basket that we have over there, that wicker basket that we use for carrying coal? Take that basket, go to the river, bring me a basket of water. I need a basket of water. So the boy thinks, great, this I can do. This is the perfect job for a young boy. Basket to the river, water, yes, I can do it. So he takes the basket, he goes to the river, he fills it up, he runs back to the house. But lo and behold, all of the water has, of course, come through the basket by the time he gets home. And his grandfather says, what's this? I told you I wanted a basket of water. Go, run faster. Bring it before the water spills out. So the boy again runs, he fills it up, and he runs as fast as he can back. But of course, it's a basket, right? Water's all spilled through it. So the boy says, Grandpa, can I take a bucket instead of this basket? And the grandfather says, no, I told you, I don't want a bucket of water, I want a basket of water. Take this basket down and do it. So the boy does this several times, each time running faster and faster, trying to get back with a basket of water. But each time, by the time he gets home, all the water has already dripped out. So now he feels really horrible. And he gets in his grandfather's lap and he cries and he says, Grandpa, I can't even do that. I can't even bring you a basket of water. And the grandfather says, Beta, I knew you couldn't bring me a basket of water. Of course the water's gonna spill through it. It's a loose weave basket. Of course all the water's gonna fall out. He said, but you tried very sincerely. You tried with full heart. And look at that basket now. He says, what is different about the basket? The boy looked over, and where the basket had been black to begin with, because it was the basket used to carry coal, now the basket was clean and beautiful. And the grandfather says, you see, even in what you think are failed attempts to bring me this basket of water, that sincerity of trying has cleaned this basket so beautifully that it's like brand new. He said, so in the same way, your attempt to study the Gita, even you think it's a failed attempt, you think you can't learn anything, you think everything is spilling out of you like the water spilled out of the basket, but your sincere attempt to do so is actually transforming you. Like your attempt to bring the water in the basket transformed the basket. So keep reading, keep doing. So that's the path of Gyan Yoga, the path of wisdom, the path of study, the path of learning. But again, it's not about the memorization. It's about the sincerity of the attempt to understand, to integrate, to become one with it. And then, just as much as he loves Gyan Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, path of devotion. Okay, so you're not much of a scripture reader. No problem. You're someone of love. Great. God loves to be loved. So have a path of devotion. Love God. In any way, sing God's glories, do puja, write poems for God. Just love God. Quietly in your own heart, loudly for all the world to hear. Either way, doesn't matter. Just love God. Because when you love God, then as you move through the world, you're able to love God through all of those you meet, because you see God everywhere. So he loves the path of devotion. Path of action. Well, even if our path is Gyan Yoga, wisdom, or our path is Bhakti Yoga, devotion, nonetheless, we still have to act. Reading is an act. Thinking is an act. Meditating is an act. Puja is an act. Singing is an act. Japa is an act. Everything is an action. Karma means action. We cannot live without acting. So karma yoga isn't really a path that you choose. It's sort of a path that has chosen all of us. You can't not be on a path of karma yoga because you have to act. And so either your actions are in alignment with yoga, with union, are in alignment with your spiritual practice, or they aren't. But you're still acting. And if you're on a spiritual path, why wouldn't you want your actions to be in alignment with that path? It makes no sense. So karma yoga is a path that has chosen us. And it's the path in which whatever I do, karma yoga doesn't just mean, oh yeah, Saturday mornings I, you know, volunteer at the soup kitchen. It's a great thing to do. Do it. But you've also got Saturday afternoon and Saturday night and all day Sunday and all day Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. Karma yoga is not about a few hours a week. It's about 24 hours a day. How do I live? How do I make every action one that is surrendered to God? How in every action do I say, not my will, God, thy will? How in every action do I surrender my ego? Surrender that false, small s self at the altar of the truth of who I am, at the altar of the awareness that I'm here on earth for a different reason. And I surrender. That's karma yoga. That everything I do, whatever it may be, from cooking food to studying in school to driving my car in traffic to stuffing envelopes to whatever I'm doing, how do I do it as an offering to God? How do I do it with an awareness that it's not about my will, it's about your will? How do I, every minute and every moment, offer the prayer, oh God, let me get my ego out of the way? Not to trample it under my feet, not to take a pickaxe and slaughter it. Because I always say, you know, try not to do too much inner battles. Because at the end of the day, you've got to go to bed with the loser. It's all us. At the end of the day, when you lie down to go to sleep at night, that annihilated part of me is in my bed, not making for a very happy place to go to sleep. Just like if you have a fight with your spouse, right? Well, you always want to, you want to make sure not to go to bed angry. Well, in the same way, when you're having a battle inside, you don't want to think of it as a battle. I don't like to think of it as battles. I like to think of it as, oh God, let my ego get out of the way. Let there be enough space in me that even if this aspect of my ego still exists, I don't have to trample it. I don't have to kill it. Eventually, it'll fizzle and dissolve on its own. But let me rather create enough space in myself that I can actually live in alignment with your will, not my will. So instead of being a slave to my ego, a slave to the small self that says, I want this. This is who I am. This is what I need. That I actually realize that's not who I am. That's not what I want. That's not what I need. And to actually just allow the flow of grace in so that I can experience the truth of who I really am. And that That is ultimately the... When we speak of karma yoga, how everything, every action, every breath becomes yoga, union. And through that, we learn not just a memorization of certain shlokas or mantras, but we actually learn the scriptures in terms of the essence of the scriptures, the essence of the true self. And that experience of God. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.